Welcome to Econ on Mics, where we dive into the world of research with insightful conversations featuring six remarkable women economists from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Proudly presented by the International Economic Association's Women in Leadership and Economics Initiative in collaboration with Women in Econ and Policy. Stay tuned as we uncover fresh perspectives and explore the global economic landscape.
It is acknowledged that we take another step towards globalizing social progress when we champion gender equality as a matter of rights and social justice. I'm Lakmini Fernando, a research fellow of the Institute of Policy Studies of Sri Lanka, and it is my pleasure to formally introduce you to Dr. Nisha Arunathilaka, who is the Director of Research of the IPS. Dr. Arunathilaka has been a research fellow at IPS since 2000 and was appointed as the Director of Research in January 2018. She has extensive postdoctoral experience in conducting policy-related economic research in labor market analysis, education, and in many other areas. She has collaborated with and has been a consultant to different organizations, including the World Bank and the International Labor Organization. She has served in national level committees, and Dr. Arunathilaka holds a BSc in Computer Science and Mathematics from the University of the South, USA, and an MA and PhD in Economics from Duke University, USA. Dr. Arunathilaka is, in fact, my supervisor at the IPS, and today we will be discussing on one of our research papers on women's access to decent work in Sri Lanka, addressing context-specific barriers. Sri Lanka shows persistent gendered labor market segregation. The main aim of our paper is to examine the impact of context-specific barriers on women's participation in decent work. This study covers four main areas that prompts access to decent work, which includes economic, legal, sociocultural, and infrastructural barriers. I trust that these study findings will provide country-specific policy recommendations to ensure better access to decent work and inclusive labor market creation in Sri Lanka. So, Dr. Arunathilaka, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for allocating your time to have this conversation with us today. To start the conversation, can you begin by giving listeners some context about the patterns of employment and particularly employment of women in Sri Lanka?
Yes, sure, Lakmini. So Sri Lanka is a low middle income country, and the largest contributor to the economy is the service sector, which contributes about 56%. It varies, but normally it's about 56%, followed by the industry sector, which is contributing about 29%. So the contribution to employment is also mostly from the services sector, which is just short of a half the employment is created by the services sector. But what is interesting is, although agriculture's contribution to GDP is low at 7%, it contributes to one quarter of the employment in the country. So 25% of employment is coming from agriculture, which shows that it is a very low productive sector. There are high-end service jobs which pays good salaries and comes with social security and all of that in the ICT sector, finance, insurance, and professional services, and also in the public sector. But most of these jobs are only open to people with high levels of education, like degrees and all. But majority of low-skilled workers, which is about 60%, although Sri Lanka is known to do well in terms of education, about 60% of the workers in rural areas outside the Western province, which is where the Colombo, the capital city, is, haven't even completed their high school education. And they are in very low-skilled employment in agriculture, and in the female labor force participation is 30 to 35%, and it is been around that for decades. And it is actually just about the average for South Asia, but much lower than the average for Southeast Asia. In Southeast Asia, it's about 53%. And the male participation is twice that, more than 70%. Another important thing to note is that females are mostly in selected sectors. So about just short of 30% are in agriculture, as I said earlier. And then about 25% are in manufacturing, in the garment industries and other types of manufacturing sector jobs. And then you have 11% in health, education, and those are mostly public sector jobs.
We know that there is a lot of research being done on female labor force participation, specifically in the South Asian context. According to you, what is decent work and why did you choose to focus on that rather than simply the female labor force participation?
So I think it's important to look at the quality of employment also. As I said, majority of workers are outside Western province in very low-skilled jobs engaged in agriculture, which is a low-productive sector in the country. And they earn very little from that. And there is no social protection and they are susceptible to various adverse shocks, climate-related shocks and other economic shocks. So they are either they go in and out of poverty or they are near poverty. If we want to improve welfare and if you want all these workers to contribute to growth, we need to ensure that they are in productive work. So that is why it is important, we thought, to look at access to decent or quality, good quality jobs. So decent work was a concept that ILO introduced in early 1990s. It is multifaceted. It talks about productive work, which can be done in conditions of freedom, equality, security, and dignity. But of course, in the lot of the labor force surveys that we have access to, we can't really measure all these aspects of decent work. But we can do something, some of these things we can look at. So what we have looked at in our study is jobs that formal employment, because in Sri Lanka, formal employment ensures that they have access to social security, paid leave, and also contribution to retirement funds and all of that. So we've looked at formal work and also jobs which provides the legally mandated minimum wages and respects legal maximum hours of work. So in Sri Lanka, it's a legally jobs should not exceed 45 hours a week. So because some, we thought it's important to include that because in some jobs, people do earn minimum wages, but they have to work excessive hours for that. So that creates problems when they have to balance their home life with work life.
Yeah, I think it is time for us to look at our own research now. Could you share some of the findings of our research, particularly with regard to how women's access to decent work varies across household dynamics and demographic factors such as education, ethnicity, and are there any other striking findings or discoveries that you would like to highlight?
Yeah, sure. So what was very striking is, this is normal to other countries also, that education has a very strong positive effect on women's access to decent work, particularly very highly skilled, like those with degrees. So access to decent work increases by 40 to 60% for those with degrees. That could potentially be also the government policies of policy of providing jobs to those with degrees. And also those jobs are decent work. They have decent hours and adequate wages and all of that. And also what we found is people with English literacy also have a marginally higher access to decent work, particularly because of the globalization and all the good jobs being created where you need English skills. In terms of household dynamics, we found that having a male formal worker increases access to some types of decent work, but not the most stringent high quality jobs, but jobs just with formal work or jobs paying adequate wages. We feel this might be because of the social networks that are there for male formal workers that helps the females in the households to also find better jobs. And what we also found was having a female elderly person in the household also increased the access to decent work. I think that is also expected because they help out with the household work, which frees the time of younger women to engage in work. And in terms of marital status, if you look at marginally, there is actually no effect, which is surprising finding for Sri Lanka. Having marriage or being married or having children had no effect on access to female work. But what we found is this is mainly because of the married women, their labor force participation is low. No, labor force participation is high. Being married doesn't actually prevent them from participating in the labor force, but their access to decent work is less, which means they are actually in lower quality jobs, which also is partly, I think, to do with the fact that they are busy with the social norms in Sri Lanka are such that the females have the higher responsibilities when it comes to domestic work. And because of that, jobs that require more commitment and they are not able to access. So they end up doing low quality, flexible employment, which so it doesn't have an effect on the labor force participation, but it have effect it influences the sister decent. And in terms of ethnicity, also we found in some ethnic groups, women have less success because I think they are very conservative in, when it comes to allowing women to move freely, and they only allow women access to jobs in certain industries. So I think these are the main reasons why we see that there is less access.
Now we will look at the legal barriers. The Constitution of Sri Lanka has provisions to ensure that there is no discrimination on the basis of gender and that men and women have equal rights to engage in economic activities. So can you explain us to what extent is this enforced or are there implicit restrictions on women's movement in our country?
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at the Women Business and Law Index, Sri Lanka doesn't do well. We have a out of 100, we have a score of 65.5. And main reason is some laws that we see internationally, which improves the equal treatment of men and women in terms of economic opportunities, are not existent in Sri Lanka, particularly. There are no laws in Sri Lanka against discrimination. Also, there is no law which ensures equal pay for equal work. So those are some of the omissions that doesn't provide a equal platform for women in terms of economic opportunities. Also, we find in Sri Lanka some laws treat men and women different. For example, it is harder for some women to work in certain industries like the mining industry and manufacturing, because there are legal restrictions for that. And the third thing is there are also design issues. For example, if you take maternity leave in Sri Lanka, it is the responsibility of the employer to provide the maternity benefits, which is an additional cost. We have found in other studies that actually lowers the demand for women because it is more costly to employ women. So that is also a restriction which prevents female access to decent work. And then the bigger problem is, I think, the rather than the lack of laws or the design of them or the treatment of them, it is the lack of coverage. We have only about 15% of the women are in formal employment, which means they are the only ones who are covered by labor laws. Everyone else is not. And other thing is also even the existing laws are not properly implemented. Even of the 15% of women who are in formal employment, only about 7% are getting minimum wages in the legislated maximum number of hours, which means a very small percentage of women are actually in decent work, the way we defined it in our study. This lack of coverage of legislation and improper implementation are also reducing the usefulness of the legal.
Okay, now we will focus on social norms. We would like to hear from you What role do social norms play in affecting women's access to decent work in Sri Lanka and South Asia more broadly?
So as I said earlier, females have a greater responsibility when it comes to domestic work in Sri Lanka, as in a lot of the South Asian countries as well. Because of that, we see it doesn't really prevent access to labor force participation, but really access to good quality work. So women prefer to do flexible work or part-time work because they have to do the household duties also. And outside of that, as I said, because of this perception that women are responsible for these, or women need to be protected, the social norms, which are very paternalistic, is why we see it in the laws also, because a lot of these laws are drafted by males. So they, you have also observed that happening. So they have included these kind of protection, which is actually restricting women's access to decent work. So as I said earlier, they can't do some jobs in some industries because of legal restrictions. And that kind of narrows their opportunities for economic activities. And outside of that, there are also other like mobility restrictions, which are also determined by social norms. As I said earlier, some ethnic groups, female can't move around as freely as males, so which they have to either work closer to home or work only during daytime, so which is a restriction. And another thing is the public transport. It is very, there is harassment and it's crowded. And the funny thing is the way the law deals with these things is not to stop these things from happening, but they restrict female behavior more by, for example, they used to have these female-only buses. But that is also very restrictive because then females have to wait for these special buses to move around, which is taking a lot of time, which makes it harder for them to balance work life. So the better thing is to actually have policies to prevent these things, harassments happening in the public transport, so that women can move around as freely as males. And the other thing is, other than the supply side issues, this perception of women are responsible for household work is also preventing employers. It's affecting their demand for females. For example, we know in some industries, they're reluctant to take in young females because they feel that it might be costly because they have to pay for maternity benefits. And also we've found that they're reluctant to promote women because they think that they are not as committed as males. So these kind of things also prevent females from entering jobs, and even when they are in jobs, to improve, develop their careers.
Yeah, because some of these factors we have already covered regarding the social norms within the workplace, I would like you to discuss certain points for the how could the laws be reformed to prevent the persistence of implicit gender discrimination, and what other key considerations need to be taken into account when designing gender-specific and gender-sensitive policies in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, so I think the biggest problem, as I said, is the lack of good jobs, good formal sector jobs. So the government should invest in creating good jobs. Women are better protected, and also they should ensure proper implementation of the laws. Even like the legislated maximum work hours, 45 hours, is not properly implemented, which is actually a greater barrier for women to participate in the labor force, because the time is more valuable for them because they have household duties as well. I think better implementation is also as important as expanding coverage. Other than that, as I said earlier, you need to have legislation which makes it a pleasant place for females to work, to prevent discrimination and harassment in the workplace. One problem is also the way it is not very easy to take redress or use the existing laws because litigation is very expensive. For example, in Sri Lanka, sexual harassment, if you want to take action against that. It is a criminal offense. It is very expensive to, the burden of proof is very high and very expensive. And a lot of women don't get into that. So before you go to very serious legal systems, I think there should be policies to prevent these things from happening at the workplace level. Make the employers accountable for ensuring a safe, pleasant working place, so that you need to really think about the practicality of the laws as well. So a lot of thought has to go into how the laws are designed so that they are very user-friendly.
You recently wrote an article for Project Syndicate about the impact of Sri Lanka's debt restructuring and how it is hurting older women. Can you give us some information about how Sri Lanka's recent economic changes have affected women's labor force participation?
Yeah, so actually we see that the labor force participation has gone down because not only for females, but for everybody. During the recent economic crisis, that has gone down a lot. But in terms of their retirement benefits, as I said earlier, only the formal sector females get retirement benefits. So if they are in the public sector, they get a pension. But if they are outside the public sector, they have a provident fund, the employer's provident fund in Sri Lanka. The employers and employees both contribute to that. But because very small share of women are in formal sector jobs, they are not eligible for that. And the other thing is the EPF, the laws in Sri Lanka is such that if you are, it is so biased against females. If you get married within, and if you leave the job, within a certain time period, you can withdraw your EPF Provident Fund contributions, the whole gamut of it, which means even when you are in your 20s, you can withdraw your retirement funds. That makes them totally dependent on their husbands for employment as well as their retirement. And in Sri Lanka, the women actually live longer than men. So not only do they have a smaller share of females have access to these retirement funds, and even the ones who have a smaller amount of retirement funds, but they have to live longer with these funds. So they are really discriminated because of that. So that's what I wrote about in the recent blog, the need to treat men and women more equally. And also the other reason is the women can retire earlier in Sri Lanka, 5 years earlier than men. So that also reduces their contributions to the retirement. Because of that, a lot of the women are either dependent on their husband's retirement funds or whatever the provisions that they can make, or they have to rely on their children. It's a very unfortunate situation. And I was arguing for changing that in the blog.
So do these laws discourage women from joining the labor force in the first place?
Yeah, I think they do. Especially the fact that women are able to withdraw their funds once getting married. That would be an incentive for them to leave employment. Because as you get married, that's when you think of setting up house, high expense. In some of the discussions I have with women, they withdraw these funds because that's a large sum of funds that they can make use of for these things. But they are actually jeopardizing their retirement income by doing so. So it does affect labor force participation also. Especially in the garment industry, we see a lot of women leave employment after getting married. And they withdraw these funds.
Actually, there is one research that I have recently completed. Research, what we have identified is for South Asia, when it comes to female labor force participation, when it comes to like infrastructure expenditure from the government, that dimension has had a significant impact on improving the female labor force participation. And specifically, if we looked at Sri Lanka, if you looked at the negative side, what dimensions we need to improve, it's specifically the money and finance and the institutional structure. and that institutions for entire South Asia we need to improve. And for Sri Lanka, except the institutions, the money and finance should also be improved. But the research is at a very macro level and for a very short period of time. By improving this into like sectoral levels with more disaggregated level data, will give you a very focused view on the female labor force participation rate.
So one thing we wanted in the extension to the study that we are looking at, in terms of facilitating female access to decent work, one important area that we have identified is providing access to childcare, because that in the short term, actually that lessens the burden of household responsibilities that the females have and improve their access to work and also decent work. And the problem is in Sri Lanka, we don't have good quality, affordable childcare, especially outside of the Western province. And the good quality ones are very expensive. So that's one area that we are thinking of. Other problem is the transport, because transport is not regular. It is very crowded. And then there are also serious issues of sexual harassment, which are all factors that prevent women from using this transport to get to better jobs. So this is also an area where we are thinking can be improved to improve women's access to decent work. And the other things are also the building awareness about introducing things like parental leave to not only to help get help from the fathers with the household work, but also to put out a signal to say that this dual responsibility, and so that everybody needs to help out so that there is better access to decent work for females. And in a recent discussion that I was engaged in, what we were talking about very interestingly is that it is not only the right thing to do to improve females' access to decent work, but it is the smart thing to do, because a lot of the businesses, more than half the population is female. So it is important to get the contribution of females in decision-making, in strategizing, because you are looking at a female clientele. So it makes it smart business to be more inclusive of women, so that they can bring in the female perspective when you are doing business plans and things like that. So for all these reasons, I think it's important to improve women's access to decent work.
In conclusion, do you have any recommendation for further reading on this topic, a book or any papers? And are there any colleagues who work would be interesting to people wanting to learn more?
Yes, as the study that we did, women's access to decent work, there were six other countries. It's part of a group of studies, and there were similar studies also done in Peru, Brazil, Senegal, Kenya, and the Philippines. It would be interesting to see. All of these studies are available in the website of the Partnership for Economic Policy. There are working papers. I think if you want to know how the similarities and dissimilarities of access to decent work in these countries, I think that is a good source, because I have seen a lot of published papers, but the interesting thing about these studies is they are using mixed methods, because a lot of these available secondary data sources, they don't have a lot of rich information about these kind of social norms, social restrictions for women's access to decent work. This kind of information is not still captured in quantitative data sources. So we have to rely on qualitative data. So all these studies are actually using mixed methods, and now they have done focus group discussions, key informant interviews. So a lot of rich information is available on this issue if anyone is interested in.
Thank you, Dr. Arun Tilakar. In today's discussion, our main idea was to identify what factors cause poor access to decent work in Sri Lanka and come up with sensible and implementable policy recommendations toward creation of inclusive labour markets. As discussed, among many policy recommendations, creation of good quality jobs and provision of good quality infrastructure, including childcare facilities and safe public transport, are crucial in increasing women's access to decent work. On that note, we are concluding this discussion, and I appreciate your time in sharing all the details. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. A special thanks to our brilliant speakers and interviewers for their valuable contributions. Share your favorite moments using the hashtag #AmplifyingVoices and stay tuned for more impactful discussions.